If you need to record a podcast remotely, riverside.fm is the place to do it. Alex and I have been making Two Dudes Watch Cartoons remotely across states, pretty much across the continental U.S. for 3 years now. We've tried several things, and this is what works best, honestly.
Zoom turned out terrible. We used a couple other ones that we paid for that turned out terrible.
You're looking at the interface right now. I think I'm doing the screen record correctly.
Riverside has made doing this podcast as easy as possible. Riverside FM.
Head to the link in our bio to get started. That's riverside.fm.
Today.
Today.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome back to Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, the podcast where two dudes, that is us, watch cartoons. My name is Evan.
And my name is Alex. And today, we're bringing a fun one. I'm excited to talk about this. I totally went off my radar. I heard about it, forgot about it, and here we are talking about it today. We're going to be covering the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. It's called Mutant Mayhem. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people would recognize it like this is Seth Rogen's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I feel like that's not 100% accurate, but I think that's how people might recognize it.
And they leaned into that heavy during the marketing, which we'll talk a little bit about. This one flew a little bit under the radar last year because it came out soon after the writers and actors strike. The actors strike, I guess, had started. So they were both simultaneously going. So there was no promotion going on. So any promotion for it was pre-shot. And I feel like I saw a bunch of just the interview clips, same interview clips over and over. But yeah, so this is, you know, we're a couple of months late to it, but we were trying to avoid any big studio stuff during that duration. And I'm glad we could come back to it because I did watch this in theaters and you haven't seen this yet.
You watched it in theaters. Yeah. I'm jealous, actually. I'm really jealous.
It was great, yeah.
I wish I had watched it in theaters because what a joy this movie was. Uh-huh. Holy shit. I was smiling ear to ear basically all hour 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Great time, by the way.
99
minutes. Get me. Oh, I'll do it again.
All respect to the 2 hours and whatnot of The Boy and the Heron, you know, about Hayao Miyazaki, but this 99 minutes is just fantastic. Before we get too far into it.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. Today is January 1, 2024. First episode of the new year.
This is kind of fun. Think about this, Evan. 5-10 years ago, January 1, we'd be hungover as shit. And now we're two full-fledged adults. We're like, you want a podcast at 8 in the morning?
Because you just flew in yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah, we just got back from our trip. We did Michigan and Chicago, saw family, friends. We got to meet Sal, which was really nice. And we just got back late last night.
Did you stay up for the ball drop, any of that?
I'll give you 10 guesses. No. Fuck no.
I stayed up to finish watching this movie. Yeah. And I finished it at like 11:54. I was like, I'm going to go brush my teeth.
Just to stall.
And then there were fireworks. I was like, God damn it. Who's shooting off fireworks in this sleepy suburb I live in?
So we had fireworks, you know, I don't know if we had fireworks at midnight, but we had fireworks going off like from 7 p.m. on. I was like, come on, people, save it.
All right, I got the Letterboxd synopsis up here. So this is directed by Jeff Rowe.
Can I hit Jeff Rowe for a minute?
You may.
Co-director of Mitchell's and the Machines.
Yeah, which
and
is
before
we...
that,
okay, yeah.
He was a writer on Gravity Falls. Dun, dun, dun!
Okay. I feel like I was skimming through the Wikipedia and I saw Alex Hirsch in there.
He's in it!
All right.
He's here!
All the more reason to hit Gravity Falls this year. It'll be our summer up this year. I will promise you that if you give me Shrek 3 in a couple episodes.
We have our agreements.
Mitchell's and the Machines was a great one that, I also think flew under the radar.
I agree. But we probably should go back to it.
Mm-hmm. It was a great one. And that was probably the first film after Spider-Verse to really kind of, you know, call outside the box a little bit.
And this has all that same animation you want from Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. Oh, like I'm mad so. I didn't see this in theaters.
Yeah. So after years of being sheltered from the human world, the Turtle Brothers set out to win the hearts of New Yorkers and be accepted as normal teenagers through heroic acts. Their new friend, April O'Neil, helps them take on a mysterious crime syndicate, but they soon get in over their heads when an army of mutants is unleashed upon them. It's, you know, pretty straightforward premise. I've seen some people in, you know, reviews talk about it as maybe a little too simplistic, but...
Are you ready for this? I totally disagree. Here's why.
Okay.
I grew up on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Parent of divorce, you go to my dad's house, I got like 10 VHS tapes of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Back in the day, I called them movies, but from my Wikipedia digging, I'm realizing now they were VHS tapes of like episodes. It was probably like 4 episodes on a tape.
So were they like, was it like the original animated series? I want to say it was like 80s.
It's the 90s. One from the 90s, or I guess, it'd be the one that technically started in the 80s, but I'm watching probably the ones, because it went a while. Hold on, I'm on the wrong Wikipedia page now. Because it went from, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a property started as a comic in the 80s and quickly became I was probably watching the one from the 90s. No, you're right, because it spans so long. I'm wrong. Yeah, it is the one that started in the 80s, went over to CBS eventually.
But their character designs are a little, they look old-timier.
No, 100%, 100%.
It's like the Super Friends versions of TMNT. Like, if you go back, that's the only way I know how to refer to that
animation style. So, you're 100% right. So, I would bust these movies every single night. My dad's house had a TV in my bedroom, which my mom's house didn't. So I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to get to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all night. And, I'm asleep within like 15 minutes. And so it didn't matter. But what was so great about this movie is I feel like so many teen, I don't want to call myself a TMNT expert, but I'm close. I'm there. So many of these iterations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles always just err on the side of like they're superheroes, ninjas. They're ninja superheroes. This leaned into the mutant and the teenage, which we don't get enough of.
We never get. Yeah.
Yes, that's what this movie did phenomenally. Both. Yes. If it hit turtles, teenage, and mutant so much better than
the ninja was kind of an afterthought. It's there, it's present, but it's not the focus whatsoever.
Exactly.
So my background, my awareness of the turtles is more from the live action movies, and I think there was a TV series with the same like suits or whatever.
Yeah, there was.
Vanilla Ice had a song on their first live action movie.
I can't really.
Go ninja, go! I think it's.
Oh, they
it
play
might be
it.
On the soundtrack. Yeah, yeah,
they play it in this one. That's. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was Ice.
Yeah, so that's more where my familiarity comes from. They had a crossover episode with Power Rangers in Space. One year, famously memed.
I just read that they even in 2019 made a Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I believe that. But I can't, you know, I know they're like, I don't know, they're like character archetypes. Like, I know Donatello, Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo, but I've never known any of the lore. Like, I never know who all these mutant villains are. I vaguely recognize, like, the rhinoceros as, like, an action figure I might have had at one point.
I don't know. It's very vague. Purpose, though, I feel like because, especially in the 80s and 90s, a ton of cartoons were being made strictly for the purpose of selling toys.
Yes.
And this was one of them. This fell into that category of they were like, just pump out whatever you can on the TV and we will sell the toys on the aftermarket. And what's really funny is on Christmas Eve, I went over to my stepdad, his side of the family, and I have a cousin who has children now. Mm-hmm. She got one of her kids all four, or so he had one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles already, and she got him the other three. And I was just like, wow, like this is something that would have excited me as a child. And watching, I'm 30 now. I'm fucking 30. Yeah. And it's still, this kid freaked out when he got him. And I was like, yes, I love this so much. It brought me much joy, honestly.
Was it this iteration of the Turtles? Okay.
It was. I couldn't tell that it was like different per se. Cause like you said, they have their characters, they stick.
Yeah.
But as soon as I was like, oh my God, I just put the swords in Leonardo's back. I recognize mm-hmm. this so clearly.
Yeah.
I almost feel like the four ninjas, like they could be in an alternate reality, like Hogwarts houses. People are like, oh, I'm such a Leonardo.
Yeah. It's always they're these very distinct tropes, I guess.
Personalities. Yeah.
So notably, screenplay, Jeff Rowe directed, but also helped write the screenplay with, you know, the top billing of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, classic comedy
Superbad.
Duo. Superbad.
I'm on record saying I think it's one of the funniest movies ever made. It could be the funniest movie ever made.
Yeah, and in, you know, Seth Rogen talks about it in some of the marketing of the movie, is that, like, no one's ever really leaned into the teenage aspect, like, as you had mentioned, and that's his forte. He's like, I've made tons, I love, you know, teenage movies, I've made tons of them.
Coming of age.
And it's a coming of age movie.
It's your favorite.
And I don't know what it is about this specific genre, maybe there's something I need to unpack there, but, like, it always hits. There's an emotional truth and core to it.
My good friend Ryan Patterson said the same thing. He goes, any coming of age film instantly gets like several points higher on my film. Even if I'm not like crazy about the film, I'm like, man, I love this. Love it. I love it. I think you're onto something. Yeah. I don't know. You need to unpack something. I think that's why it's like universal almost. You know what I mean?
And, you know, obviously Seth Rogen's super bad, as you said, but he is the guy to do it. Also, it comes through in the character design, and this is something they also talk about. It's like, normally the Ninja Turtles look like buff superhero adults.
Yes! Yes, dude! Yes! This is what I'm saying.
I have an action figure of a buff Donatello.
Dude, the old cartoon, they were all the same size. They were all Splinter size. Like, you know what I mean? Their main villain. They were all his size. These were children. Michelangelo looked like... They had different heights, bodies, like
their voices were some of them hadn't had, you know, dropped, you know.
Yes, dude, it was so good for that aspect. And just like the comedy of casual conversation between the four of them.
Mm-hmm.
I could have watched a whole film about nothing besides them just riffing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a couple of teenage boys. Yeah, so the voice cast is four teenagers. Let me find it.
I got them all right
Abby.
Here.
Yo, go for it.
No, go for it.
Micah Abbey, Shimon Brown Jr., Nicholas Cantu, and Brady Noon. And then, so those are the Turtles. I don't know who's who. Ayo Edebiri as April O'Neil.
I always say Etta Berry. Maybe
I'm
wrong.
I don't know. You're probably right.
It's been her year. What a year for her.
Yeah. And, you know, I will be more inclined to trust your pronunciation because I have to go on record and say I looked into escapism. Not how anyone says it.
Thank you. I wasn't going to say it.
I've heard it somewhere before.
Yeah, some pretentious asshole said it that way. And you were like, oh, yes. Makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense.
Makes sense. It sounds cool.
So what a year she's had, though. She was in theater camp. Bottoms, famously in The Bear. This, like, I don't want to say she popped up out of nowhere per se, but like, what a quick rise to stardom she's had, I feel like, comparatively to a lot.
Yeah.
Great agent. Who's her agent?
Yeah.
That's the unsung hero here. Booked and busy. I love her, though. I've been watching a clip of her in Bottoms, like it's like she improvised it a little bit, and I just like cannot stop watching it. It's so funny.
The clip I always think of when her name comes up is her doing the Irish accent on the red carpet.
Yeah, that is so funny too. She's hilarious. And then everyone loves her Letterboxd reviews. We should probably follow her on Letterboxd.
Yeah. So she's April O'Neil. I'm seeing Maya Rudolph is in this.
Dude, let me read you this voice cast. Yeah. This is the most insane voice cast for a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie of all time. We have the four main characters. I would say the only one of notability of the main characters is Nicholas Cantu. He plays Gumball in The Amazing World of Gumball for that whole series. The rest
Does
of them, though.
Did he recently get in trouble?
I don't know. I feel like mean the character or Nicholas or who? Gumball?
The voice actor.
Oh my God! Wait, I think you're right. Yeah, with Dream, the YouTuber. Oh my God! I can't. Oh my God! Wait, is it him?
Nicholas Cantu. There's a feud between him and Dream. What's this about?
So they were like in a car, and someone was saying some racial things. Is it Nicholas?
No, I think it was Nicholas.
I think it's Nicholas too. But then everyone was mad that Dream was drinking with underage children and recording them.
Also weird.
also weird behavior. Holy shit. I totally forgot about this because I'm chronically online too, but the name Nicholas Cantu didn't mean anything to me when it came out.
That would have flew by me if you didn't say the Gumball thing. Why do I know that?
Oh my God. Yes, okay, so we're going to move past that. This. Sorry. Okay.
That might be half a star for me.
Evan's like, we're rating on the fly here, Nicholas. Yeah. You've just lost one. Okay, let me read this cast, though, because the cast is amazing. We have Ao Edebiri as April O'Neil, Maya Rudolph as the villain, John Cena, Seth Rogen, Ross Brin, Giancarlo Esposito, Jackie Chan, Ice Cube, Paul Rudd, Post Malone, Hannibal Buress, Mr. Beast, and Alex Hirsch, who created Gravity Falls.
Yeah.
Oh, what a crazy cast.
Jackie Chan plays Splinter. Their master.
Do you
want
to know what was a really sad realization for me?
What?
So I'm listening to Splinter, and I realize it's Jackie Chan, and I was like, wow, he must have aged. And I was like, oh, Alex, he does not voice Jackie Chan on Jackie Chan Adventures. I was like, he doesn't sound anything like he used to. It was bad. It was really bad.
And, you know, we'll probably get another Jackie Chan animated voice role coming up in
Kung
March
Fu Panda?
When Kung Fu Panda 4 comes out.
Do we need to watch 2 and 3 to probably get 4?
Nah, let's hit 4, go back for 2 and 3.
Yeah,
I'm only worried about doing Shrek sequentially.
I hate you. Okay.
You know what? Yeah. I'll say, while I appreciate Jackie Chan, that casting, I think it was the weakest one. I think, you know.
That's interesting because I really liked Splinter's character here. Yes. Once again, he's always relegated to, I stay in the sewer and tell you to be careful and I teach you. And it's like, He had a growth arc here. He realized the error of his ways and that he was maybe raising his boys not in the best way. Beautiful. We don't get that from Splinter ever. Yeah. So I guess maybe voice acting wise, I get what you're saying. Maybe it wasn't the strongest of everyone, but I just really like the character. So I'm gonna look past it.
Totally understandable. Prior to this movie, did you ever read Splinter as their adopted dad?
Is that maybe kind of their master?
Like master, yeah. So that was an interesting dynamic for me. But.
You know, that's a tough call because you needed to ask me before the movie because now I feel like he's so obviously their dad. I don't remember if I ever thought that before.
I was watching it this time. I was like, has he always been their dad? Because I think it goes back to they're never really shown as teenagers.
You're right. You're probably right. And I loved his narration where he was like, because I was an old rat, I turned into an older rat. Because you were young turtles, you turned into baby turtles. I was like, dude, what? Okay. But I thought his character was really good. He's the dad to the turtles. He teaches them kung fu. And I really liked the split in of like real life. Like they're watching Ferris Bueller. Like that really threw me for a loop. And they're like the self-defense classes is where they're learning their, their ninja skills from.
Yeah. So the Ferris Bueller thing, which happens very early in the movie, sets up the emotional arc of the movie. It's the plot of the movie, essentially, or it's the goal. And there's a line where one of them goes, "One day everyone will love us like Ferris Bueller." And I was like, boom. So simple. That's it. And that's why I think the critiques of this movie being too simplistic is like,
no.
It's also a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that's for 10-year-olds. But it's like that simple storyline, and it's so compelling, just like that. They are teenage boys looking for acceptance.
They want to fit in, which what teenager doesn't? Granted, they have the added struggle of their mutants and turtles.
Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated that aspect of it. I like, this is just a solid movie. It's 99 minutes. You know, you can't get more complex than that emotional arc.
I don't think I have like a knock on it. Like, I don't think I'm like, oh, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, I guess we have one knock now on it. But like, I was so entertained the whole time. I thought it was like a really fresh retelling of it, like we said. Mm-hmm. And it was fucking hilarious.
It's so funny.
I don't think we've said it yet, but it was so funny. I was laughing. Like I said, there was something so funny about like the comedy of casual conversation, which when you look at it, like a lot of Seth Rogen movies can be like that. Like he writes like that.
Yeah.
And wow, just the whole part where they were like riffing off each other. He's like, I got the gangster voice. He's like, get me a bacon, egg, and cheese. I got my Tim's. And then it turns into them just being like, we outside. I was like, dude, this is how we were in college with our fraternity.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Weird flashback to hitting the nae-nae in at a park.
Dude, that's what they were doing. Yeah, 20 dudes all doing it at the same time.
Just the dorkiest shit. But no, I think that is one of the pluses, is like the dialogue and the humor and the jokes is probably some of the most modern, like modern, I mean, as in current, that you'll hear in a movie for this age demographic. Like, because, you know, writers are for more established studio stuff are generally 40-year-olds, you know, 30s. But Seth Rogen, you know, I think he's plugged. He's like tapped in on
he has to be with this movie, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
He
streets ahead.
It's never gonna happen. It's never gonna happen. I'm a big Seth Rogen fan. I like look up to him. Yeah. He's my idol. Like, I agree. He has to be plugged in. But just like I said, the Turtles, something I love in animation because it's how people speak in real life often, is they'll talk over each other. Or they'll try to like cut each other off. It is so realistic, and you don't get that in animation. You get someone's face, and they say, and then you cut to someone else's face, and then they say their thing.
Yeah. And so a little background on this episode. We were going to cover something more current and more
recent. You going to call it out by name?
Yeah. We're going to cover Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. I remember Chicken Run being a hit in 2000, so, but I started it, and it has Zachary Levi in it. I just couldn't keep up. I mean, not keep up. I just could not stay tuned into it because it was just too straightforward of, this is a movie about chickens breaking into someplace. And so I was like, all right, I'm out. I don't know. I think it's getting okay reviews. Anyways, all this to say, Zachary Levi voices the main male rooster in it. But like you hear it, and I can hear how tight the voice booth is. I can hear that he recorded it independently.
Yes.
For this movie, Seth Rogen made a point of doing the four turtles together, the four teenage boys together, for the recording sessions, which is something he got from doing Lion King with Donald Glover and Billy Eichner. So he brought that in, and I was on the Wikipedia said they would have as many as seven actors in a session at one time. So, and you can really feel that, I don't know, energy throughout
that.
That
makes so much sense because it's so unique. It's not, like you said, you can hear, sometimes they don't play off each other. That was something anime used to be really bad at, is like they knew their lines, but they didn't always know the context of like everyone else's lines almost. Mm-hmm. Like they're just literally reading lines. everyone in this knew exactly what was going on at all times. They could hear each other and react to what they say and change it on the spot. Like I said, oh my God, that makes so much sense, because I don't think you could get that scene where they're all like, we outside. You can't get that if they're not all four together. Like, you can't write that. So that's crazy. So they had to animate. I never know. And what comes first, like voice acting or animation?
But this one clearly was the voice acting.
So I think they got a rough storyboard of the animation, and then they start the voice and then they finish it.
Yeah. Like an That's animatic. My guess.
Like a sandwich.
Yeah. Okay. One person you mentioned that I don't want to glance over, brief role, Giancarlo Esposito. I always see him in stuff and I like, it's like, is he typecast as kind of a villain? Yes. I do want to see him play outside of that a bit here and there. But
he's so damn good at it. He's amazing at it. Really a villain.
He's just like the villain's origin or backstory in this.
He's chilling, but also like understandable. He's not like just like crazy. Like this one was like, I want to be accepted. I never had any family that accepted me. So you little creatures, we're going to grow up together and you'll accept me. And like I said, it was so strong, the whole theme of acceptance. That's all these mutants really wanted. And I also think what was so brilliant about the movie is that was what the villain wanted, too. The main villain in the heroes, he was like, you and I, we're not so different. And I was like, yeah, they're looking for the same exact thing you are. Whereas too many times it's like the hero's looking to be recognized by the whole town, and the villain just wants to destroy the whole town. And you're like, well, they have opposing goals, which is fine. Yeah. This one, their goals really lined up. It was I thought it was great. I almost was like, is this a kid's movie? I had to check the rating. I was like, what's the rating on this?
Yeah, well, I think there's times. So the villain, Superfly, great name.
He's played by Ice Cube.
Ice Cube.
He kills
That might be the most perfect, my favorite voice actor in this movie.
He was perfect for it. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but like, you could tell it was Ice Cube, but you really got lost in the Superfly of it. It's like how in 21 Jump Street, he's like not the villain, but he's always angry, and you can hear that in his voice. He's perfect to play a villain. How did I not realize this?
Yeah. In the production section of the Wikipedia, it says, so like one, they wrote to Jackie Chan to see if he would be interested in, you know, playing Splinter. And obviously he did. And then Ice Cube signed on because of him and his son's, like attachment to it.
Nostalgia.
Which is a nice touch. And I like this movie again, flew under the radar. And I think it's one everyone should put on because it's like, it's not...
I think it's one of those films like a Shrek where you take your kid to go see it and you're like, oh, wow, I loved that actually. Like as a 35-year-old, a 40-year-old, you're like, that was really good and really funny.
Yeah, it leaves you with like a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, it did.
It's very rare. Like I felt that, you know, it's like sort of like Into the Spider-Verse in that way, Across the Spider-Verse. Like
more like one movies. Than the other.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm joshing. I'm just being a professional hater.
But yeah, this is why I was really excited. And I know I've mentioned it on the podcast a couple times, and I was secretly hoping we'd come back to it because it's just like, I don't want people to miss this. It got lost in the noise. Although it made $180.5 million at the box office on a budget of $70 million. From Paramount Pictures.
It's on Paramount Plus. That's how I watched it.
Yeah.
All you Survivor fans have no reason not to go watch it right now. You have Paramount Plus. Don't lie to me.
Also, music by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
The music also was amazing throughout the film. I'm sitting here like,
they've got some amazing needle drops in this movie.
Even the part where they're like, the villains were hilarious. So it's Paul Rudd, and they're like driving the van that has the last component of the... mutant machine, and they're like switching through the things, and she's like, oh, I love this song, and he's like, no, we gotta find something we can all sing to, guys. And they put, so I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high, and I was like,
it's the internet version, though. It's the He-Man version.
I didn't catch it. But I think they play it after. They play both. But I was just like, this is so good. I was like, I haven't thought about that song in so long, but it is a song everyone can sing to.
We mentioned Spider-Verse, and I think that's another of the things stylistically about the animation in this movie that I think it's probably the thing that people will mainly celebrate and talk about. This sort of takes a page out of that book. It's like Mitchell's versus the Machines. It's super stylized.
Very comic booky.
Very comic book, but like sketchbooky. And one of the things they were aiming for in it is that they wanted it to look like sketchbooks. They wanted it to look like the concept art. And you can see that in the character designs where they're all a little wonky. They're not like...
They're not perfect.
They're not like Disney-fied where everyone's got a nice, round, cute face and they're all symmetrical. Like everyone's asymmetrical in this.
Yeah.
They all look a little fucked up. But like... some of the most fascinating stuff to me on second watch is just like looking at the backdrops and like the lighting effects. A lot of times it'll be just like a white scribble of like a pencil, like layered and layered, like cross-hatched over each other. And it really does look like a sketchbook.
On like vehicles or a fire was where I really saw it. I was like, oh, this is just like very crudely drawn almost.
Or his wings at towards the end, Superfly's wings, they're like swirly swirls. It looks, it's incredible to look at. I can't, what were those like? I'm probably going to fuck you. They were like, I want to say it was like Rocksteady Games or something. They were like mobile story-based games for like, I want to say like The Walking Dead. There might have been like a
Telltale.
Batman. But that's what it
I
is,
loved
right?
That Walking Dead game. You're right. No, I totally see it. I totally see it.
I was way off.
It's okay. Yeah. As soon as you said Walking, I was like thinking it, and then you said Walking Dead. I said, "Oh, I know those games."
Yeah, but it's like, it's stylized. It looks like it could, like you could take a still, and it sort of looks like concept art. It looks 2D almost, but.
Yeah, like I said, comic booky, storyboardy, which I really appreciate, which is cool because this was a comic book first. It also has Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle has like 6 or 7 manga written about them now. Like it is expanded across so many different mediums. It's like this to me also felt like a real celebration of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as lame as that sounds. Like I said, like it wasn't just like we're gonna make a superhero movie. Like this encapsulated everything that they're about. It's so hard to put. Like, this movie was great, in my opinion. I just was like, I can't believe how much I enjoyed it. I thought I was going to like it. I didn't think I was going to fucking ooze over it. That was so funny when he was like, yeah, I bet you some sludge fell down in the sewer and that created you guys. They're like, we prefer ooze. It rolls off the tongue smooth. Ooze. And they're all just like saying, I'm like, dude, this is so funny. Or like real Gravity Falls humor. They like run and it's like the big battle at the end and they hide in the bus and they're like, okay, I think we're safe here. Cut two, he kicks the bus. Like there's no time to breathe on that at all. So funny.
It has the improvisational energy of, you know, any Adam McKay, Seth
Michelangelo
Rogen
loves
or,
improv.
Yeah.
He goes, Donatello's like, if we put this in the blowhole, he goes, yes, and then he continues his thought. And I was like, dude, that is so good.
Any other highlights on the voice cast? You think? I'm trying to think.
I thought it was
Who
funny.
Was Maya Rudolph? Was Maya Rudolph the
villain that milked them? We didn't even get to the funniest
part. How did that squeeze by?
Their dad the whole time is like, you're going to go to the surface and you're going to get milked. And they're like, dad, stop. We don't have nipples. That's not true. And then, of course, the bad guy at the end milks them of their blood. That's real Gravity Falls. And he comes up, Splinter comes up, and he's like, what is this machine? And they're all like, nothing. It doesn't do anything. Like, they're trying to avoid it. He goes, does that say Turtle Milker 2000 or whatever? Yeah. It's like, dude, no way. That is so funny.
I can't believe Seth Rogen's snuck a milking joke into a children's movie. So.
You know you would have loved that as a child. Like, I'm milking these turtles, Mom. She'd be like, don't say that.
So, I mean, we meet the turtles. They meet Etta Berry.
April.
April.
Etta Berry.
Pretty
April.
Soon, huh?
You could call her April. April. Oh, Hero. Or Hope. Mm-hmm. April Puco or whatever they call her.
Yeah. And that was an interesting. I liked the way they like intersect. She's, you know, she's a student journalist and she has her own kind of arc. She's trying to, like, she's also looking to fit in. And
it's really good writing.
She's got a chip on her shoulder because she's Puke Girl.
Puke. And she goes, that could say Poke Girl. And they're like, no, it definitely says Puke. Like, it was so funny.
Yeah.
Like, one of them just calls Switch a Ratatouille. And he goes, don't call me that. Like, I don't, it's so funny.
Yeah. A lot of modern references, which is, I don't know. It's just refreshing. It's,
It felt like they lived in New York in 2023. Mm-hmm. I think that's, like, the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And I know there was a live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Stick to the animated medium for this. This should stay animated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because I haven't watched any of them, but I know there was
an old one that's really, like, terrifying almost. Well, there's an old live-action.
Yeah, there's an old live-action. Those are the ones I watched, but there was, like, a CGI.
A Michael Bay one.
Michael Bay.
Your man.
With Megan Fox's.
With Megan Fox. All right,
yeah. I might check them out.
Yeah, I might have to check that one out. I just think this needs to be animated. And like I said, they took what is like the greatest style of animation right now. And they're like, we're fucking doing it. Like Seth Rogen put his whole chest into this movie. He was like, everything needs to go perfect. And it did.
Yeah. And I mean, this has been the past year or two for animation has really push the boundaries of what like is what
movie
the mainstream
quality
consumer is willing to, or what here's what it is, what studios will think mainstream consumers will accept.
Yes.
Because it's been proven to shown to us over the past couple of years that we want so much more. We don't want just the Disney-fied version. Wish famously was there them Disney dabbling into this like more expressionistic, like kind of storybook or whatever, how painterly.
And they're gonna take the wrong lessons.
But it still looks just like every other fucking Disney movie, and that movie bombed.
And it did.
So, and I haven't seen it. Maybe we'll have to check it out. But if you're gonna do animation, if you're gonna do fucking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like you need to push the boundaries of what the medium can do. Like this is what this medium is here for. It's what can't be done with practical effects, what can't be done super well with CGI.
You can't get the super fly kaiju where at the end he's like Attack on Titan. That shit was so funny to me too, dude. Like the references were so good. But okay, my point is the super fly kaiju monster whale horse monstrosity, imagine doing that live action. No thank you.
Yeah. Because it would have to cut to a bunch of people in buildings being like,
oh. Yeah.
And like a reflection, like just walking over them.
Evan and I are wannabe movie critics. We're also wannabe chefs.
We're all doing more cooking at home now. If you want to elevate your home cooking, you need nice tools to do it. Louis Kitchenware will get you there. They have beautiful stainless steel pans, nonstick bakeware, knives, all the stuff you need. Safe, high quality materials, constructed to last, made in the United States. Founded in Detroit.
Moving into my condo, we got hand-me-downs. So this new Louis Kitchenware has been great, and we love the discount. We want to share that with our listeners.
You can use code 2DUDES, that's T-W-O DUDES, at louiskitchenware.com, and that'll give you 10% off anything on the site.
Check out our link in bio.
Plot-wise, there isn't.
Yeah, April O'Neil helps the turtles are like, she connects the dots to him. Like you said, simple, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
She says, well, to be fair, if you guys hadn't helped me, I don't know I would like you either. And they were like, it's clear as day. We got to help people if we want them to like us. So they were like, we're going to be heroes. And her AO, April, towards the end was like, you know what? I was doing this for the wrong reasons. And turns out they were doing it for the wrong reasons. And I think it's a really captivating scene where the whole time they're doing this, I don't want to say for clout, but for acceptance. I think that's actually they want to be socially accepted. And oh my God, what's also so great? I'm on a long tangent. I'm so sorry. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was made to, I don't want to say parody, but there was like strong inspirations for what was popular at the time. And
ninjas,
it was
mutants,
It was X-Men. Yeah. It was the Teen Titans. And it was Daredevil. Those are the three inspirations for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. And it just shows so clearly. But I really like the whole, they look different, people don't accept them, because that's super X-Men. And I think that's like a really strong, poignant point in X-Men. And so the whole movie leads up to they're doing this so that people of New York will accept them. They want to be the heroes. And as they're helping, as they're fighting, they're like in a Times Square thing and they see all the news channels. And they're like, they hate us. They're like, oh, they think we're the villains. Mm-hmm. And they're like, worse, they think we're monsters. And my heart sunk. I was like, oh. And that was when Leonardo, he goes, also, I think it was an inspiration for my Spanish name in high school. he goes, well, guys, we were doing this for the wrong reasons, but I still think we should be the heroes. And I was like, yes.
That's nice.
What a great, like, it could have been a different movie where they just like save the day and are accepted. But
where
there was
they learn more martial arts. Yeah.
They learn more martial arts and thus more people accept them. But like that's not what this was. There was like that huge dip and downfall and they had to do the right thing for the right reason.
Mm-hmm. Also, you saying the Nardo thing, just classic nicknaming. You're famously, we called you Zard or
Zard. Instead of Brizard, it turned into Zard. Zardo.
Zardopolis.
That's what friends do too. They nickname each other. They rib each other. They roast each other too. He's like, guys, no, Leo is fine. He's Leon. He's like, Leon's pretty good.
I don't know if I said this, but Raph's voice actor, I might have told you this, sounds so much like Brendan. Sounds very similar to Brendan.
You know what? I didn't even think about it while I was watching, but I remember you telling me this months ago, actually. Like, dude, so one of the turtles sounds like Brendan. That's so funny. I'm going to have to check that out again. That's pretty great.
There's like this plot where Superfly is trying to steal parts to build a whatever mutant
thing.
He's going to
mutantize every animal on the planet and take over the humans, a la Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes style.
He's Magneto. So if this is the X-Men, he's Magneto, right? And he's trying to loot. He's trying to tempt.
And Splinter is Professor X. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, we're one in the same, man. We both hate humans. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a pansy about it, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
I think he said pushover.
There are times where Ice Cube's casting and him delivering the dialogue that I think this movie's PG rated, but it's like you're like listening closely. I was like, I want to make sure, like, it sounds like it could be more.
Let him call Splinter a bitch.
Please.
Let him call Splinter a bitch right now.
Slip one in there. God, he's perfect in this movie.
He really was. No, he genuinely was. Because sometimes when you cast really famous people as voice actors, it just feels like them. But because the casting was so perfect, like, you recognize it's Ice Cube for sure. Mm-hmm. It's not like Robert Pattinson where you're like, is that Robert Pattinson? Like, you know what I mean? But like, you recognize it's Ice Cube, but you don't get lost in the fact that it's Ice Cube. You're like, this is Superfly.
Yeah. His introduction, though, it almost felt like the Joker's introduction in The Dark Knight to me.
Yeah.
Like, he's like the mastermind behind the plot. All his lackeys or whatever get murked, you know, once the job's completed. And it's like pretty menacing for
He kills off
crime plot.
They were like, you know why no one knows what Superfly looks like? Why? And they're like, because he kills anyone that sees him. Like, oh yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. And they're like, I want to say traces of like, and I don't know that it's direct inspiration, but like Rush Hour to me, like when they're going, busting up the different.
I couldn't tell if I was just thinking Jackie Chan, so it was like on my brain. Mm-hmm. I felt the same way when they were busting up all the small time criminal shops.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the movie, specifically Splinter's fight sequence towards the end is very much inspired by Jackie Chan's martial arts. But I think you can sort of see the influence through the rest of it. But in that fight specifically, where Splinter is like kicking stuff, he like kicks a chair and he's rolling around on the ground and like using stuff around him. Like, that's textbook Jackie Chan. Even when I think it's Michelangelo. One of them is when they're in the car shop and he's like weaving in and out of the car, like the windows and stuff. Like, that is all textbook
Jackie Chan stuff. Choreography fight scenes. Yeah.
Which is I totally agree. Which I also loved in the live action Yu Yu Hakusho.
I didn't hate it as the thing, but it was, I loved the fight scenes. The fight scenes were basically the whole reason I watched.
Yeah. Really impressive fight choreography in that show that I wasn't expecting. But also in this one.
I agree. The fights were very vibrant, and it wasn't just like sword versus sword. Like, it was, like you said, like, they use the environment around them. They use things. I love Donatello. He's like, well, how did I end up with just a giant stick? But then he was like, they're in the car and they're like, okay, if only we had something long and skinny that could fit under the chair, but firm enough to press the brake. He's like a stick. And then like a minute later, Superfly like uses the stick to ram the gas. He goes, oh no, he used my stick against me. So funny. That's like such classic humor. That's great. Yeah,
good setup and delivery.
I can like hear Jonah Hill saying that in Superbad. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also interesting, like, the way that they, the sort of final act, kind of unfolds is like, it's not just them working through, fighting through all the lackey mutants. They actually sort of side with them.
They turn coat.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just like the more discussion based than fight based towards like in that middle before the kaiju sequence happens. I don't know. It's like this movie, as great as the fight sequences are, is not the memorable
action
part.
Movie. Yeah, it's not like a fighting movie. I feel like it is like a action comedy, but more comedramedy. Yeah. Like it's good.
Yeah. The ninja part is very much the
back burner.
Yeah. The least compelling, but it's not to say that it's not compelling. I don't know. I just love this movie. I remember leaving this movie and I was like, man, this is just a good movie. This is like why you go to the movies. And it felt weird not having anyone to talk about it with for so long.
I took so long. Yeah, but the strike really ended up hurting it. And that's why we didn't cover it during that time. But this is as much of an endorsement to be like, go watch this movie right now. Mm-hmm. Like, age, situation, whatever you got going on, you can spare 99 minutes of your day to watch this, and I promise you'll leave being like, yeah, that was good. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
If you have any nostalgic... Should we just roll into final thoughts?
Whatever. Okay. Let's roll into our final thoughts in Letterboxd. Hotbox this bitch.
Let's look at some... I'll pull up some Letterboxd reviews first, and then we can kind
of... No, I feel like we're going totally out of order, but...
Okay, whatever.
I don't know. No. Let's do the Letterboxd. Let's do the Letterboxd, and then we'll do our final thoughts.
All right.
Maybe we should do it that way for every time.
I think we do most of the
time. I don't know. New year, I'm totally off my basis. Or at least I try to set it up that
way. 4 stars. They really milked them for real.
I wonder if there's any like metaphor of being like, we're milking this this intellectual property for all it's worth.
Yeah.
Okay, 4 stars. When the group chat actually hangs out.
That's
very much
the vibe of the movie.
Yes.
The double entendre of the milking, I'm going more of like the FX show Dave, if you've seen that.
No, don't. Why would you go there? Keep it innocent, please. I got one. Oh my God, this is a good one. 4 stars. And it's like two halves. It says Donatello, and then it's the handshake emoji. Teddy Roosevelt's foreign policy. Be careful, I have a big stick. That's good. 4 stars. These nice turtle boys are my new best friends. I love when they were like, yeah, we're like boys. She's like, you guys are like, so you're Ninja Turtle men. And she, they're like, oh, I like boys, I like teens, teenagers. Like, so funny.
Yeah. I really liked at the end of, after they beat the kaiju, they go to school without their masks on.
Without their masks on. That was such a nice touch because I've never seen them take their masks off.
Never. They're like Mandalorians in that way.
As if those masks are doing anything. Those are strictly, like, what secret identity are they hiding? Yeah.
But it was like a really sweet, touching moment. And then whatever the song plays, I don't know. It's so
I didn't
like,
think
optimistic.
I needed that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I needed that at all. Like, I didn't even think about it. But once you see Michelangelo's mask drop through, you're like, oh, wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, I don't know. It really brings the coming of age piece, like, vibe of the movie full
like,
circle.
Total acceptance. Like, they don't even need to wear these masks that are they don't even need to wear their arbitrary masks because they're accepted. Yeah. They're accepted now.
It's cute.
Oh, man. That's good.
This one's just kind of earnest, but utterly delightful. My Mondo Gecko action figure is beaming with pride. Ignore that second part, but utterly delightful.
Utterly delightful is a great way to put it. Uh-huh. I got the one right under it. 4 stars. Never would I think Mark Ruffalo's performance as Professor Hulk gets referenced in a movie. And it got referenced twice. He was like, you're good at stuff. He's like, you're even better than Mark Ruffalo. Then some things. I was like, dude. They're like, oh, that's like Mark Ruffalo. He goes, he's the Hulk. But everyone knows he saved the city, so they're all taking selfies with him in the diner. I was like, dude. And someone goes, did you know Mark Ruffalo actually improv most of that? Dude, it's how people talk to each other. It's so good.
This movie is so refreshing because it's this coming of age like we've talked about. It
caught me off guard a little.
Yeah, it will catch you off guard. If you liked, you don't necessarily have to have nostalgic attachment to the Ninja Turtles.
I don't think
so. You just have to have a general knowledge of there are turtles that live in the sewers. And
they're archetypes.
They're archetypes, yeah. And like,
who's your favorite? Oh my God, I didn't. This is the one question I had. Who's your favorite turtle?
I was going to say Leonardo, but I can't. I can't in good faith.
You can pick him. That's not who I thought you were going to say, though, I'll be honest.
Raph, maybe?
I thought you were going to say Raph. I thought you were going to say Raphael.
Probably Raph.
You like that archetype, but I hate to break it to you. I'm Michelangelo in real life, and you're Donatello in real life.
That's fair. Yeah.
But I think Leo's my favorite, too. But fuck you, Nicholas Cant, too, is ruining it.
Donatello's a good one. I feel like, arc-wise, he was maybe a little underserved. I don't know. We'll get more of these. I think there is a TV series coming, like, spinoff of this happening, as well as sequels.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. That
should be smart.
I'm into it. Yeah, do it. Mm-hmm. I'm normally against that. I'm like, why? Why? Yeah. Just leave it as is. I could do more.
You know what?
No, I could totally do more with
sure.
this.
I feel like for so long, mentions of the Ninja Turtles, it's like either they're superheroes or whatever, or they love pizza.
They do love pizza.
And sure, they have some pizza in this one, but it's
cowabunga, dude.
There's no cowabunga, dude. Like, I don't know how they got reduced down to those weird tropes.
The tropes,
but it's like there's rich.
They really got distilled to the basic essence of what they were.
There's really fertile, rich territory to be explored with, like, the teenage aspect of these characters. And I'm glad Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg did it.
I read on the Wikipedia, when writing, the original villain was going to be Shredder, who's, like, their most famous villain. Everyone would recognize him. But then they said, we want a villain that is more relatable to the... And that just makes so much sense, because that's why they went with another mutant. The whole city. I just think that's so... I think that's great writing. Whereas, like, a lazier writer is like, nah, Shredder's still going to be the villain. We need it to be Shredder.
Like, what other franchise movies are, like, shuffling around villains? Like, actually putting that type of thought in care into how they roll things out. Like, we used to think the MCU did that to serve The MCU does that to serve the MCU and like setting up movies, but not like the emotional core or truth of a movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I think James Gunn does that though. I think James Gunn, from James Gunn's point, I think Guardians of the Galaxy 3 really opened my eyes to this because I was like, how do you make a story with emotional stakes? And I think that's what this is. It is not a save the world, even though it turns into that a little, but it's an emotional stakes. And I was like, you almost have to work backwards. Like, to make that emotional payoff so worth it, you have to set up all those plot points and seeds and emotional moments well within the movie from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's what this did so well. Like you said, in the very beginning, one day we'll be as popular as Ferris Bueller. That's all they want.
And they're watching people
we know that
play
from
in the
jump.
Park and like kiss and like hang out with friends. And they're just watching like little weirdos.
Like ninjas.
Yeah, like ninjas.
Like little weirdos. Leave them alone. You mutant shamer.
It puts you into their emotional state so early on in the movie.
That's how you do emotional stakes, though. You have to put the viewer in their shoes, what they feel, why they feel it. And then that's how you get that big payoff of the moment where all the TV screens are like, they think we're villains. No, but they think we're monsters. Mm-hmm. Even we're like, oh, it's so, God, it's so good.
Yeah.
I love it. Review. What do you got? Stars. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first. I've been like trickling in my thoughts here and there. But if you liked Spider-Verse for its animation, for its emotional storytelling, you'll love this movie. Even if you don't have any nostalgic attachment to the Turtles, like this is just a solid film through and through. I think anyone can enjoy this movie. I'm gonna knock a half star off for one of young voice actors' antics. But what was that YouTuber doing in the car? So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. You know, it's a different 4.5 stars than Hayao Miyazaki. I don't need to understand.
It's our ratings. Yeah. You don't need to justify it. I agree. I, like Evan, think this was such a robbery of this movie from the actors and writers' strike. Obviously, we support the strike. We're not like, oh, I can't believe the strike did this. We support it. Just the timing of things, it's very unfortunate that this happened. It's a casualty of the strike. But I'm going to be honest, this would have made double the amount of money if they could have promoted it properly, I think. Because this was, like you said, I think anyone can enjoy this. I think we would have seen old men at the theater who were like, oh yeah, I used to read the comic as a kid or whatever. And we would have seen new children who have never seen the property before in their life, loving it and walking out and pretend sword fighting with each other, whatever have you. So I think, like you, I am going to knock a little off it, but I'm going to do something a little different. I'm giving it 4.75 stars.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
This was very close to 5 stars for me. This is something I genuinely feel like next week while I'm working, I may watch again. I could watch this again. Like I was like, I know me laughing because I had to do it a couple times or I was going to be late to the podcast if I kept doing it. But I had to go like back 10 seconds to be like, wait, did I miss a joke? Like because I was laughing or something. You know what I mean? And that's the sign of like I just said that about Bottoms to Nikki. I was like, we were like laughing over some of the jokes because it was like that's how good it was and like fast some of it was. And I think this had the same thing. I think for an animated movie, this is one of the best well-written movies I've seen in an American animated film in a good while. And the animation itself was just gorgeous. Mm. And it was just flat out fun.
Yes.
I had so much fun during
it. It's a lot of fun. Okay. You love the fun of the movie. I'm not saying you don't love these other things. I just love how I feel good. Like it makes me feel warm on the inside when they walk into the high school.
Oh, that is a real great moment. And obviously they're going to get accepted, but the pause where everyone's just staring at them, it's great. Makes you feel it for a moment. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, and Splinter finds love at the end with Scumbag. Didn't know I needed that either. Love that. He's like, we'll be here if you need anything, me and her. Like, I was like, dude, no way. He goes, it's very hard to meet other mutants my age. so funny. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah. This is a great film. Okay, I'll meet you at a 4.75.
Join me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's great.
We've never done the 0.25s before. I felt appropriate though. Nicholas can't
do. Any integers are on the table.
Were you gonna give it 5 stars?
I probably was gonna give it a 4.5.
I think I was gonna give it 5. Oh yeah, okay, that's fine. We dropped the facade, but
criticism.
I think I was close to giving it 5, but I do want to save my 5s. I think I gave Pinocchio a 5, and I don't know, like, this is on the same level as Pinocchio, if that makes sense.
I enjoy this movie more than Pinocchio, which is, you know.
Enjoyment is totally subjective. Mm-hmm, sure. I totally agree. Like, people could be like, yes, I enjoyed this.
You're wrong, Alex.
People could be like, I enjoyed this better. But sometimes when I look at a film, I like to be objective and take my enjoyment out of it and be like, what do I think was the better film?
That's a good way to look at it.
That doesn't mean I enjoyed any differently. Like, I'll watch both those movies. You know, I'm gonna watch this later this week. Like, I'm excited to watch. I'm excited to see it again.
I think if you just like any Seth Rogen stuff, you'll probably enjoy this movie.
If you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you like Across the Spider-Verse, or you just love. Get to the theaters. I mean, shit. Get to Paramount Plus.
I don't know if it's streaming anywhere else, but you can find it on Paramount Plus. There is a TV spinoff coming. I don't know when. I don't have a lot of the details. I hope they do a sequel.
Can't imagine they wouldn't. Yeah. Honestly, if I'm being honest, I just don't see how they wouldn't. Yeah. I don't know.
But also, was it Paramount? The executive that was saying that they're gonna stop doing as much in-house anime. Oh no, that might have been DreamWorks.
I think that was DreamWorks. Weirdly enough, even though they're like all animation, they're just not doing it in-house as much anymore.
This is completely random. We were talking about how there's so many references in the movie. I've been watching here and there, Jujutsu Kaisen, and
is there a lot of references in that?
One episode, they were talking about a villain digivolving. I was like, that just shook my world. One anime just referenced another one. And then I think there was like a human centipede like parody.
Reference?
There's one character mentions going to a movie called Human Earthworm. I was like, oh.
Wow. Okay. Let's get into a little news. I feel like we got some news. I got one. Yes. This is funny news. I don't know. It's like real news, but apparently Scottie Pippen has written a movie where he is roommates with Foghorn Leghorn. And it is a sequel to Space Jam.
Are you sure you're not looking at Disbussin' film?
No, it's not. No, it's not. I hate when I've muted it is what I did. I muted this Bussin' film. They're so good though. The problem is I very quickly am one to send things to people. So if it's shocking enough, I don't check. I just don't. But so sometimes people will send them to me and it's like from a muted Twitter account. I'm like, what? And then I have to be like, it's this Bussin' film.
That account and Listenophiles is pretty funny.
Oh, Listenophiles got me so many times. It makes me so mad. It looks so legit.
Okay, so he's written. I'm sorry.
He's written it. It's a follow up, and he's roommates. Oh, it says roommates / cousins with Foghorn Leghorn.
Is this a spinoff of Space Jam? What is he going for?
I don't know, but I kind of need to see it.
Is this attached to a studio?
No. It's just Scottie Pippen in an interview has apparently written a movie.
Interesting. I respect his time on the Bulls. You know, you have to have a strong second in command to achieve what they did, but I don't know that he's got the pull to pull that off, especially.
He's like, if Michael Jordan gets a Space Jam, I should get a Space Jam.
And they're like, who can we give him? Foghorn Leghorn. Okay.
He's like, that's my cousin and my roommate.
Here's one for you. New Cars projects are in development. Projects are in development at Pixar.
Yeah, but do you know why Cars is so popular at Pixar?
Because
of the fucking
toys. Yeah.
It's the toys. Ka-chow. I hate it.
Do you think Owen Wilson is jazzed to be coming back? I guess he's in under the Disney umbrella with Loki and stuff, but
I can't imagine he's jazzed about the project. Maybe the paycheck.
Yeah, you know, that's probably why he gets. He just does whatever he wants, and you know, however many he's got, Wes Anderson movies he's got.
Yeah,
he's
he
got
doesn't need to make money on it.
Life is he's a highway, baby.
Do you think he says that when he cashes those Disney checks? Ka-chow. He's just singing it to him. He says ka-chow.
Instead of ka-chow. He's flipping through dollars in his wallet. Ka-chow, ka-chow.
I hope. Well, so it's. I realize no one deposits checks anymore. So like the direct deposit notification, I hope his phone ka-chow. Goes ka-chow.
And then a car vrooming by sound.
I also think Life is a Highway is a close second contender, though. And it instantly puts him in a great mood. It's his ringtone for his agent. He's like, uh-oh, money's calling.
And then his ringtone for Wes Anderson is that one TikTok Wes Anderson. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. Bum,
and he... That's good. That's funny.
We have to take a moment. Aquaman 2 The Lost Kingdom is
I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
Either. I'm
the end of the DCEU. The
official end of the DCEU. You know, moment of silence.
Moment over. Yeah. Okay. So we have mixed feelings on the DCEU.
Yes.
There's high highs and low lows. Not much in the middle, though, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Are you nervous to see this movie at all? I know you love Aquaman 1. I just like it.
I'm not nervous. I know it'll probably be not great, as the first one wasn't, but I had a whole lot of...
You loved the first one.
Hey, I can separate me enjoying something from it being good. I know how to do that very well.
Totally good.
Aquaman
that's good. That's
is a
good.
Bad
yeah.
movie that I love.
it's like me with Black Adam.
It's just like they're going for this high concept sci-fi thing. The dialogue's pretty shitty. But I enjoyed it for the most part. So I'll take Aquaman 2 for whatever it is, wherever it, you know, closes out the DCEU. It's been a love relationship. Love disappoint relationship. Not a love. I've never hated it.
Yeah.
I've
never hated it. I really haven't. I never was like, ah, oh, what are they doing? Like, I don't know. Maybe we gave them too much
grace.
Like,
you know, it's just like that friend who keeps letting you down, but you keep lending the money, and then they're like out on the street buying drugs or whatever.
You're like, oh man, I just love
them
too much.
They're in a bad
though.
Spot. You know,
you gotta help them out. Yeah, I get that. Do you think there is any symbolism to the Flash movie's last credit scene being like Aquaman pissed drunk and like falling over? Was this Andy being like, Aquaman's your last one? Yeah, bye.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not nervous for it.
I really think the tooth fallout scene is supposed to be like symbolic of the end of the DCEU. Yeah. I really feel that way, if I'm being honest. Otherwise, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I don't think it'll wrap up the DCEU. I mean, I don't think, you know.
No, I don't know. I think there's no wrap up, which.
It'll end.
It's fine.
Well, are you nervous to see it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be terrible. I'm nervous. I'd like it to end on a fine note, if I can.
I think it has.
I don't want the last thing people being remembered as a shitty movie again. They think that about all the other ones. Give us one where people are like, "Wow, that was actually really good." That's the problem. Is
the
like
Marvels.
I'm excited for the
box office.
The Marvels though is a very unfortunate cross section of
intersectionality,
douche fanboys and and the strike and racists. It's no fault of its own.
And
I'm sure it's a great movie. And sex. Yeah, it comes at a horror.
Number one, one star reviews. Nicholas Cantu on the Marvel stuff.
All right. Oh, I got news. Despicable Me 4 is coming this summer, 2024. It's 2024 now, Evan. This summer, 7 years after the previous film, that can't be true. They've made Minions.
Well, yeah, but a proper...
Oh, I see. Oh, they don't count the Minions as...
It's its own franchise.
Do you think Universal, or who is this?
It's Illumination.
Who is... Illumination. Hey, do you think Illumination regrets the Minions?
No. It's
do you think there's like workers there that are like
printing dollar bills for them? They're like, ka-chow, ka-chow, ka-chow.
Yeah, but there's gotta be okay. Maybe the creatives at Illumination are like these fucking annoying banana. Like, there's no substance to them.
I don't know how many Minions movies are there. You know what? We never watched
I don't know
whichever Minions one was the one that went viral and people would show up in suits to.
We were talking about it. I think it was during like a bad spike of COVID or something.
Like
though,
Minions 4.
I don't remember why we never did, but
I don't know.
Do you remember like they made 4?
Okay, I don't know if it's
movies?
4.
I was
going to
say 2. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. There was like that huge trend where like everyone showed up in a suit and tie to the theater in like mass droves.
Yeah, and they had to put signs on theaters. If you're here for the was it gentlemen?
With themselves? That's what they called themselves. Oh my god. See, I don't know. I don't want to go out in public when things like that are happening. Like,
I'd be out.
Yeah. I don't know. That doesn't. I'm not into that.
If I saw an army of white boys walking into a theater with suitcases, I might be looking for the nearest exit.
I would not be staying. I'm not staying. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not staying.
Here's one. George R.R. Martin has revealed that there are currently 3 animated Game of Thrones shows currently in works, including 9 voyages about a series about the voyages of the Sea Snake. They were in House of the Dragon.
So that's exciting news. But then the article goes on to say, none have been greenlit yet, and 2 other animated shows previously have been shelved by HBO.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like, way to kill George R.R. Martin, like, really being like, guys, there's still a lot of love for the thing. There's 3 animated properties that are like, none have been picked up.
It's brutal. That's all I have for news on this edition. Yeah.
That's all I got, too.
This was a nice way to kick off the new year, right?
What a great way to kick off the new year. Happy 2024, everyone. Make some resolutions.
Did you get everything you wish for this Christmas, this holiday season?
Yeah. Hell yeah. We didn't talk about it, but look at these nice new headphones. This is your daily reminder to go watch us on YouTube. Yeah, I got these new podcasting headphones. They're blue. They're soft. They're great. What more could I ask for?
Awesome. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I got everything.
Yeah.
I'm happy. It was a good holiday season.
You got
it was
a baby.
With the baby.
I imagine that has to change the holidays.
He had a very lovely first Christmas.
I mean, we even had to squeeze us in. Like, I'm sure you were just doing visits this whole
nice
time. Like, everyone's like, I need to see the baby. Like Mandalorian, they're like, I'd like to see the baby. I can't believe I didn't say that once while I was at your house.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, I was too enamored by the cuteness.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. Thanks for spending the first week of your new year with us, if you're listening to it.
This is not coming out first week.
Okay, second week of the new year. I don't know. Thanks for listening to the pod. If you're really loving it, I don't know why I'm rolling into your thing, but if you're really loving it, please share it
go
with
for it.
A friend. You know, if you don't love this episode. Or if you haven't seen this episode, we watched a ton of stuff. If there's stuff you want us to cover, let us know in the comments. We love hearing from you guys. We just want to share the love. We love talking about cartoons. We love talking about cartoons with you guys, listeners. Follow us on Instagram.
I think what Evan's saying is we're very grateful for each and every one of you. This is something we do for fun, and to like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they do it for fun
and acceptance.
And the fact that you guys have fun for us.
We just want to be
you have fun with us just means just we do want animation to be more accepted though. We are on a bit of a similar mission. Interesting. Yeah, I love that. But yeah, like Evan said, we have a ton of episodes in our backlog, something you love on Apple, Spotify, and on YouTube. Make sure you follow us at Two Dudes Watch Cartoons on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget to leave us a rate and review if you're on YouTube. Like it. share it. Like Evan said, 2024 is the year of growth for Two Dudes. We've seen very steady growth in our 4 years. We've had ups, downs, what have yous. This year, we're doing it big. That's our resolution to you.
Yeah, and if you want to support the pod, we actually, there is a way to support the pod at our link in bio, or just in the show notes, there's a link to, you know, donate, pledge a monthly amount. If you have find yourself enjoying the podcast, you know, we'd love your support. Thank you for listening.
Buy Evan a coffee for when he's editing late at night.
Yes.
He's a new father.
That would be great. But yeah, that will do it for this episode of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. Happy New Year. We will catch you next time. Ka-chow. Two Dudes Watch
Cartoons. Yeah. You got me good there. I wasn't ready for that.